Welcome to the Let's Talk International Education podcast. I'm your host, Ruth Benny, founder of Top Scores. We're here for you, whether you're a parent, grandparent, a teacher, as long as you're interested in education, you're in the right place. We work hard to bring relevant, up-to-date, and possibly controversial information on all things related to education. This is our second season, and we've invited education leaders from around the world, as well as parents just like you and I. We're pleased you found us. Don't forget to subscribe. And here's today's episode.
So I really enjoyed my visit to Dalton School. It was probably my last time in the existing building before they move out to their new campus on Hong Kong Island later this year. It was great to see the school in full flow. It had been a while and the children really gave me the warm and fuzzies. And there are not many schools that I can say that about, really, truly, honestly. The children were so friendly. They were confident. They were polite, respectful to one another. They were helping each other. The cleaners knew their names and the interactions were just natural and warm and friendly. And literally these children skip around the school. I'm not joking, literally skipping. This was a really interesting chat with Sean Porter and Russell Cayley, and I hope that you enjoy it.
Welcome everyone, and thank you for watching live. I'm here with Russell Cayley and Sean Porter from Dalton School, Hong Kong. We're currently in West Kowloon, but we might get into that in a little bit. So if you have any questions for our speakers in regards to anything that we're talking about, please type in the comments and we will incorporate them. This is your chance to ask our speakers live, as it were. So charting a new course in education, quite a grand title, and it's been so nice. It's been at least 2 years, I think, since I was here, and the place is buzzing and it's just got such a lovely feel. And congratulations, really, genuinely, the school is growing and you're taking on some new ideas in education. So let's start off by asking you, what are some of those new ideas? I know there's something around and tech that you're incorporating into the learning program.
Yeah, so I think maybe thank you, Ruth, for having us, or I guess we're having you today, but no, we're very excited to have you here today. And I also want to maybe introduce Russell to you all as well. So we are really lucky to have Russell in town this week. I would describe Russell as a thought leader in progressive education, and he's currently the managing director of Think Learning Studio, which is the think tank arm at Think Global School, where he also was the principal at one time. And so he and three other members from the Think Learning Studio team have been in town with us this week to really think about this big idea that we've talked about that in our title, in terms of how do we kind of chart this new territory, new space. And I think when we talk about something like AI and tech, you know, we can definitely talk about some of the ways that we are, you know, thinking about how to intentionally integrate that. But I think a big thing we're thinking about is how does AI and other tech tools maybe disrupt the learning space in the way that we've always thought of it. Mm. So some interesting conversations around, you know, what is core curriculum now? Right. When you start thinking about it, when technology can do so many things that were once must do for humans, you know, do things like character become even more important, like the human skills, like how do we make sure that that's a really, really integral part of the core curriculum, versus just thinking about it's like now we have a whole new list of tech skills to add on top of this already, you know, rigorous academic core curriculum. But definitely, I think just in terms of the usage, I mean, AI definitely can change the game. And I think for us, what we've been really thinking about is how do we, you know, make sure that everything is mission aligned. So as a school that really values child-centered learning, making sure that we are using it in a way that makes us better at personalizing learning to each child. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the, you know, things I see teachers doing regularly, one, it's really helped with differentiating instruction, right? So things that, you know, lessons that would take hours to plan for in the past, you know, you can now, you know, manipulate resources in a way that gives, you know, a whole class access to things that maybe would have once, you know, been really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. The way that we can kind of personalize feedback in a more, you know, efficient and effective way is really helpful with terms of assessment, being able to design more like authentic rubrics and checklists and, you know, authentic tasks, which I think feeds really nicely into what we're now thinking about for secondary, when thinking more about, you know, a more project-based learning approach, how I think tech will actually really help us do that in an even, you know, smarter way.
Mm. Interesting. I mean, we're going to talk a bit more about project-based, inquiry-based learning. If you have any questions related to AI and tech in schools, you're just speaking about it from an educator's point of view. I just wonder, as a parent as well, you know, they also have maybe some specific concerns. If you have any questions about that. I like the, I mean, there's a lot of jargon and we talk about that, you know, and there's a lot of words I hear a lot. And personalized and differentiating is one of the two of the words that I hear a lot, but I don't hear the word intentional. Mm. I like what you say about, and I do feel that, you know, I've spoken with you a couple of times. You're a popular guest on our live stream, and that what you're doing is very intentional. Maybe that's the point that you could pick up, because that's presumably why you're here, you know, to work with Dalton School to implement something that's obviously intentional.
Yeah, you know, when we launched Think Global School, it was 15 years ago, and there wasn't all that much happening in this space. It was a very lonely endeavor. There was a lot of doubt, a lot of naysayers.
In what sense?
Oh, people thought we were crazy. I mean, you've also got the you've got the concept of a traveling boarding school, which is one thing that would go to three to five. And the model has changed somewhat over the years, so three to four different countries. We were initially an IB school, actually. And then we evolved. We sat with our accreditation body and said, listen, we want to go in a different direction. And they were wonderful. They supported us. They saw the vision. And I think we really felt that we were one of the few schools in the world at that point that could be intentional, as you say, about making a move into the unknown. And I just felt we had a group of learners and a group of families that really supported it. That's why they were at Think Global. They weren't there to do rote learning memory tests. They wanted us to take a risk. So we had their full endorsement. And I think... But you're right, being intentional about that. And I think we were, you know, we had a lot of, we did a lot of soul searching before we went down a pathway, which we hope has encouraged others to join us over the last decade.
Maybe we should just clarify people thinking, what is a traveling boarding school? Really super quickly.
So Think Global School goes to four countries every year. The learners will be there for 7 weeks. The staff will be there for 8 weeks. And it's a project-based learning school in the sense that around 40 to 50% of the curriculum is PBL inspired. Now, project-based learning means many different things to many different people. I would say we play in a sandpit of multiple P's. So we work with portfolios, we work with phenomenon-based learning, play-based learning, obviously project. So it's a very diverse curriculum, but it really has the learner at the heart of learning. And the students will conduct personal projects, but they'll also do thematic country-based projects. So the idea of Think Global School, the origins, was how do you bring people together from different cultures, different religions, and really break bread over education or through education? And these learners from societies and worlds that just don't coexist come together to work on prototype and designs of solutions to projects for whatever place they're in. So it's also place-based. That's a big part. It's not just projects, it's place-based. It's huge for us as well.
Awesome. Amazing. When did you set that up?
The school launched in 15 years ago, and I've been part of it for 13 years.
There's a few more since, aren't there? I remember there was one that was on a boat.
Yeah.
That was sailing around the world. And
Yeah, there's a couple of boat ones.
Interesting. I think, again, bringing it back from to the parent perspective, you know, you talked about risk, and we want to engender resilience and a tolerance of risk in our children. But as parents, I think we tend to be risk averse. So there's always that balance. I mean, it sounds exciting, you know, new and progressive and innovative, but, you know, is it going to work? And so I guess now it's proven.
Well, we've got 10 years. I know I'm speaking from the Think perspective. We've now got 10 years of graduates. I was just in Shanghai with one of our graduates, you know, and to see them excel, to see them be part of the world in the way they are is really inspiring. And, you know, our students that get a fully accredited high school diploma, the method of learning is different, but what comes out at the end in terms of, you know, that certificate is or diploma is actually not that dissimilar.
Right. Maybe we should move into project PBL for those. I mean, thank you that we had some visuals to help, but project-based learning. And a lot of our schools in Hong Kong are IB curriculum, which is inquiry-based learning. So what exactly is the difference? And maybe they're more similar than they are different.
Do you want to start with that? Because I think it's interesting. Part of why we were drawn to work with the Think Learning Studio, you're hearing, I think, some of the commonalities already in sort of the belief in progressive education. But I think that, you know, they have the experience of actually beginning in an IB space and then, you know, ultimately developing their own curriculum, which is known as the Changemaker curriculum. And so that's something that, like, what I feel very grateful for is that they have already kind of, you know, charted into these waters. And so being able to kind of learn from a proven concept and thinking about kind of what works and what doesn't in a PBL model, because it is, you know, PBL model is one of those things that can be kind of all over the place. So I don't know if you want to share a little bit about that experience, and then maybe we can talk about like what we're thinking in adult and context.
Yeah, I think project-based learning means many different things to many different people. And as you said, you know, we already have inquiry-based learning. Mm-hmm. There's obviously, you know, we've brought in our version of project meets place. But what we've seen is over the years, we've seen a lot of people try, with really good intentions, project-based learning. But we have seen a few commonalities in where it kind of either acts almost as a supplementary program, as an add-on. It doesn't run core through the curriculum. And I think that's what we've dedicated the last decade to. How does the PBL complement maybe a maths lab or a language lab or a capstone writing based program? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like it's everything isn't projects. It's very much it lives within a wider curriculum, but it's treated with the respect and you know, with the gravitas it needs. So the students are doing those projects, as you said before, believing they're intentional, believing they're meaningful. So 2 points. I think what we've designed is a set of competencies, a set of standards that are quite future facing and quite embedded in not just traditional education, but kind of futurism, where societies are going next. So that's been great. And then we've also developed a portfolio, which the students then create as an artifact of learning. And so you know, the project isn't just kind of vibes, it's yeah. rigorous, detailed learning.
It sounds relatively similar to PYP at the moment. So what am I missing? How is it different from IB?
Well, we've taken this completely through middle years and high school. So actually, what you've got there is much greater depth. We've embraced things like artificial intelligence. We've made, you know, we've got the learners. You know, I did a talk the other day where I was talking about, you know, when I graduated from school back home in England, Manchester, I knew nothing about Manchester. Mm. I knew nothing about the Industrial Revolution. I knew nothing about the history. Mm. I knew everything about the four walls of the classroom I was in, but I knew nothing about the outside space that was my home. Mm. And I think what we're trying to do here is have these young people immersed in not just the place they travel with, but they also design service projects where they take home to do some good as well. Mm. So I think, yes, I agree with you. I think in the primary space, there is incredible work going on, but it kind of stops.
It falls away
in middle school. And what we've managed to do is chart a pathway through latter middle years and into high school, and it's worked.
I guess it is that risk, you know, on the part of the parents and the school leaders, that they are leading them towards a fairly predictable course of higher education. We still need that degree. So interesting. So,
and I don't know if I could maybe jump in here too, because I think one of the things that drew us to working with the team though is that, you know, yes, they've learned all these different things that worked for the Think Global School, right? But what they've been spending this time with us this week in doing is really getting to know us and, you know, our community, our DNA, and how do we now develop a changemaker curriculum for Dalton, right? Yeah. So it's not going to look exactly the same way that it did for Think Global School, because we're here in Hong Kong. And so, like, even when we talk about things like place-based immersion, you know, as a school for us, you know, the emphasis on Chinese culture and Chinese language is really important to us. And so when we talk about place-based learning, it's wanting to make sure that our children have some amazing place-based opportunities in the Greater Bay Area, you know, where they're getting to really make use of their, you know, their Chinese language, make connections with their home space versus, you know, we're not now becoming this traveling school that's going, you know, going all over the world. That's not our intention in this. But I think something else has come up this week, and they've been interviewing students, teachers, parents, directors, you know, really getting a feel for the whole school. And a few things that have come out that I think are really important in our vertical articulation is that you know, our kids are really happy.
Yeah.
Right. Like they love to learn. They're curious. Like they are. You can see them developing all these, you know, 21st century skills that we talk about. And when they talk about what makes a happy school and what makes a not so happy school, mm-hmm. you know, why stop doing that? Right. Why does secondary school have to be this place that's, you know, governed by, you know, grades and tests, right? I think, and they've proven, like, it doesn't have to be that way. I think that's been a story that we've all been sold, but that, you know, and also it doesn't mean that we compromise rigor either. There's a lot of rigor involved in project-based learning. Mm. And as Russ said, like, you know, for us, there's certain kind of non-negotiable core, you know, classes that really need to be embedded in there as well. But the difference is, in so many secondary settings, you know, you're learning in isolation, right? You learn this siloed subject that doesn't connect to anything else. It doesn't connect to your life. It doesn't connect to what you're learning in the next class. And so being able to, you know, say like what you're learning in math is actually useful, and you're going to apply it in this project that might actually also not just help you learn something, but actually maybe help the world. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, it's a continuation of what you've always been doing, because since the establishment of Dalton School, and I've heard you say it so many times that a lot of parents are attracted to this school because of the bilingual program. Mm. And you've always said that it doesn't need to be stressful, doesn't need to be rote, doesn't need to be lots and lots of homework, which has been really interesting for me. And now extending that into secondary. So, you know, less of the stress on the traditional academics. And yeah, is that fair to say?
Yes and no, because I think I think yes, in terms of the stress part. Right. But I think that, you know, we even see now, right, that academic rigor expectation really does, you know, it correlates to the age of the kids, right? So it really does, you know, ramp up and increase with each stage. And, you know, I think if you talk to some of our fifth and sixth graders right now, like, they'd probably say, like, yeah, this, some of the stuff that we do is hard, right? And also even things like home learning, those expectations do evolve as well, right? Mm-hmm. In lower primary, it's a, you know, a very minimal amount that we're talking about. But, you know, our upper primary students, grade six students, they're starting to engage in some home learning assignments. I think for us, though, again, I guess the word of the day is going to be intention. I think it's that when we are doing stuff that's outside of school, it should be intentional and not just this kind of busy work practice thing, right? But it's something that's going to really reinforce, maybe even further inspire the learning that's taking place. Mm. And that's also, you know, you see like something like an interdisciplinary project makes that a much easier thing to do than when everything's just siloed, you know, subject by subject.
Yeah, it does. And we touched on this earlier, though. It does require teachers who are 100% committed and who have the skills, because it's not an easy thing for a teacher. You probably make it's not right. It's much easier for a teacher to reach for a textbook and teach pages, whatever to whatever. So maybe now's a good time. You are expanding into secondary. Yeah. What's your philosophy on hiring teachers and getting them trained up to be able to deliver this in a successful way?
Yeah, I definitely, like, 100% agree with you. And I think that is actually, in many ways, I think that's one of the reasons why schools do shy away from this approach, right?
I totally agree.
But I think actually in the age of AI, you know, this is what we need to be moving towards as a profession, right? Because otherwise, if we're going to just keep teaching things that a textbook teaches, computers can do that now. All right, so I think that this is the direction that the profession really needs to go. We are so privileged to be surrounded by just an amazing team of educators here, and bringing in the Think Learning Studio team with their expertise too is amazing. But I think when we're looking at teachers, you know, obviously there's like two things that are non-negotiable that we're always screening for in the hiring process. And our hiring process is a very long, you know, arduous process. But the two main things do have to deal with, like, mindset and beliefs, right? So the first being that you have to trust students' intelligence. Mm-hmm. If you do not trust students' intelligence, this isn't going to work, because you're not going to release control and allow them to do, you know, to zig and zag in different directions. And then I think the second is that you have to be a reflective practitioner, right? So that, you know, the best teachers are the ones that when they finish a lesson, they're already thinking about, oh, I would have done this differently, or I would have thought about this differently. And so, you know, when we go through a hiring process, we go through a lesson study with a teacher, right? We plan a lesson with them. They teach it for us. We talk about, like, the lesson, and you get a real insight into how people think about their practice. Mm-hmm. But that's just to get in the door. And then once we're in the school, you know, we are a school, I think, that has definitely made the choice to, you know, there are limited resources, right? But as a school, it's been a priority for us to allocate resources towards teacher professional development, mm-hmm. as well as teacher collaboration time. because this is hard, and you need support to be able to do this. And so whether it's been, you know, dual language, working with Dr. Medina, bringing in the Think Learning Studio to help us with this process, mm-hmm. you know, being committed to making sure that teachers do get that type of professional development to be mm-hmm. able to make something like this happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I just say as well, just very quickly, I did TED Shanghai last week, and my three lessons of my talk actually fit really nicely to what Sean said. My three lessons were, we have to almost unlearn as professionals in education. We have to trust the learners. And in 10 years traveling the world, working with teachers and professionals in every corner of the planet, the time to act is now. Like, I've seen that very clearly. There's incredible momentum right now for our profession to pivot, because the data is overwhelming. Like, teachers are leaving this profession in their droves. And ultimately, it's not going to matter what we think, what we feel. There is not going to be enough people to deliver education if teachers keep doing this and students keep doing that. Mm. One in four teachers is thinking, this was one of the latest reports that came out of RAND, was one in four teachers are looking to leave the profession imminently.
Mm.
That happens, we have a massive problem. So this idea that teachers are showing up for work, educators are showing up for work, they don't want to just teach the same lesson six times a week, talk out of a textbook. And yes, there is some resistance. So over the 10 years we've hired for Think Global School, there is some initial resistance, which we as leaders have to expect. We were not trained for this. We didn't go to teacher college for this. However, once the door is open and then educators see the joy of learning, that they are acting on these young people, they begin to do things that they haven't done before, like team teaching and co-design. All of a sudden, give these educators 6 months to a year, they change as much as the learners to fall back in love with the profession. You know, we have educators on the ground who now love to co-design, they love to co-teach, they love to not be the expert in the room. It's like, do you know what, I don't know about the latest AI model, so let's sit down and learn it together, let's learn prompt engineering together. That is the future of education, because if we stay stagnant in, I'm a history teacher, okay, I could teach till I'm 65, World War II, but honestly, do I want to, really? Do I want to? No, the future is going to be understanding genomics, AI, digital networks that we don't really get. You know, there's just the whole movement in the US at the moment, you know, should we ban certain social media platforms, or are social media the future? It just keeps moving. Mm. You know, the environmental systems that our young people are so plugged into, sustainability issues, these are all constantly moving phenomena that we're not going to pull from university. Those of us like me here are plus 20 years out of uni now. So we have to grow with the learners, because the information knowledge that's around us, especially in a place like Hong Kong or Dubai where I live, is so rapidly moving.
So interesting. It's this, wow, we could do another thing. Very, very interesting. I want to reserve some time, and when we are running out of time, if you have any questions for Sean or Russell, we're at Dalton School, then we have a few more minutes. The third area of, you know, innovation, like new and interesting ideas around education, is the mental health and well-being. I want to come back to something you said, Sean, about you surveyed the children about what they enjoy and what they feel about the school. What were some of the things that they said?
I don't know if you, I'll share with some things that the team shared with me, because we also tried to give them a little bit of space to, you know, they wanted to complain. They didn't, you know, I wasn't going to be in the room to hear. But I think some of the things that they described, I think that students are describing how that they feel respected because they have voice and choice, right? Yep. They have voice in the types of things that they get to study and talk about in class.
Is that a phrase that is used in the school?
Yes.
Voice and choice.
Yes. Yeah. You know, they talked a lot about the relationships that they have with not just their friends, but their teachers, you know, that they feel like the teachers really care about them and get to know them, you know, as people. They talked about how they even like put things about their lives into math problems and, you know, things like that. So they, you could tell that they feel really like seen and a sense of belonging to the school, mm-hmm. Which that made me really happy, you know, to hear that, because I think that's really, really important. And something that, again, we can't, like, just because they're now going to go to secondary school, why would we take that away? And then they, alternatively, when they were asked, you know, what do they kind of fear or not want to experience in the next step of schooling, you know, they can already say things like, I know at another one of my friend, they take a lot of tests, right? Or they have to do a lot of, like, you know, where they have to just write things over and over again. And I don't want that, right? And so we as a school have always kind of made the choice to really listen to kids. It doesn't mean that we're going to always do exactly what they say, but that they do, you know, deserve to have, you know, a voice in what they're learning. Because when they do, they're that much more invested and engaged in what they're learning. And that was why it was even just this week, right, being part of that process, you know, saying to them, like, we want you to have a voice in the shaping of this next step in the school. It's not saying that we're going to just design a castle, but that you really get to have a say.
So what is the new and what's the area? What are you doing in terms of mental health and well-being in the school?
So I think one is just it's a topic that I think is a devastating topic right now when we think about both in Hong Kong and globally in terms of what kids are dealing with. I would say that we've always had as part of our house, you know, in the Dalton Plan, there's the house element, and the house is really about cultivating community, belonging, having an adult that's really got, you know, your champion that's looking after you, not just your academic well-being, but your emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. And so that structure is one that, you know, we plan to continue through. And what's special, I think, about the school too, is that as a dual language school, is you don't have one house teacher, you have two. You have, you know, someone in, that's your English house teacher and your Chinese house teacher who's like, you know, a really strong team together, but they're both, you know, having an opportunity to look after you, which I think does make a difference because you have kids of different language backgrounds. Some of them are going to feel much more comfortable opening up in their native language versus the other. So I think creating that safe space is really important. We have done a lot to kind of ramp up our character development program, which I think in the middle years and secondary years, we plan to kind of term more as an advisory program. Mm-hmm. But really thinking about, you know, explicitly teaching into, we always think about East and West, so our Chinese values and our character competencies. And so getting like time with the, you know, prioritizing some time within the week that kids get to actually like really learn, whether it's like looking at scenarios, talking about things that are happening among them, you know, in class, you know, reading certain types of, you know, books that might teach into those types of character lessons, you know, that there is time and space every week to be able to delve into those type of topics. Yeah. And I think maybe a last thing, you know, is just also just being kind of honest with kids about the things that they are facing in their lives. So like a couple of weeks ago, we had anti-bullying week, but one thing that has come out with kids is things that happen outside of school, particularly like cyberbullying. And so looking at things like, you know, in math, looking at data around how young you should be to get a smart device, right? The correlation between mental health and access to smart devices and just, you know, presenting kids that information and get trusting their intelligence to look at that, make meaning of that. Mm-hmm. And then how do you make positive choices for yourself so that you don't fall into, you know, that sort of statistic.
So you've got all the elements. I'm just curious, how does that look like in a typical day for a student at Dalton School? How do you incorporate the PBL and the mental health well-being stuff?
So with I think the mental health and well-being is something that's implicitly dealt with all throughout the day, right? I think every time a teacher sits alongside a child, like that's an opportunity to not just check in with them on what, you know, what they're learning in that moment, but how are you as a human? But explicitly within the timetable, the beginning and the end of the day, there is dedicated house time to just check in, you know, see, and for most kids, right, they come in, they're fine, they're happy to kind of do some of their sort of choice activities, but that does give you a space as a teacher to, if you notice someone coming in a little bit emotional, right, or maybe a little bit withdrawn, you have a little time to go in and say, you know, talk to that child before they have to jump into the academic rigor of the day. And then also we do believe that play is the engine of learning, and you learn a lot of social emotional skills through play. So, you know, across grade levels, they do have, you know, everybody has a midday play break, and then depending on the age group, it might be a morning or an afternoon play break, and teachers observe that. So it's not they just have, you know, like it's not just support staff observing that, but that teachers are often not just observing you and even playing with kids, because you get to learn so many unique things about kids through that time. And then every Friday afternoon, we have a character advisory period where we get to really explicitly teach into some of those concepts and skills.
Yeah. Wish I had little kids. And we've got a comment. Hold on, let me just see if I can as I expected, a few questions about, we probably just need to touch on the new or the second chapter of Dalton School. So very, very quickly in a nutshell, Sean, what's happening in September?
Sure. So yeah, and many of you may be aware about that it's starting from September. So we're, as Ruth said in the beginning, that we're currently located here in West Kowloon. But as we've been growing as a school and now moving into adding middle and high school, we are going to be moving to the Hong Kong Island side, which is and integrating a local curriculum in kindergarten and primary as part of from the existing Rosary School. And so moving into that campus space, also very excited to kind of, you know, with some of the renovations that are taking place there, that, you know, that for the campus will be kind of a really exciting space. And that's in, so from September, that's when, you know, Dalton will officially be there as well. But yeah, I think it's exciting because obviously, you know, we're getting to talk a little bit about how now we're moving into the secondary space. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, as lovely as our campus is here, we've been lacking in like outdoor facilities. So being able to mm-hmm. add that element, and also like some of the like the performing arts spaces, right. And things like being able to come together as a whole community. And then also being able to expand the mission of Dalton, right? What that means, yeah. Is something that's really exciting too.
Exciting. Rosa's question. I think we answered the question about, you know, teacher training. You're investing a lot, and a lot of your teachers, you said to me earlier, they're word of mouth referrals.
Yes.
So no worries on the teacher front. Thank you for your question, Rosa. We're going to have to wrap up quite soon. I believe you're doing a talk in a couple of evenings. Is that right?
Tonight.
Yes. Can I just do a quick plug?
I hope
is
I
are there spaces?
Tonight it's going to be actually
is it
here.
For the public?
It is actually open to the public. So it's part of we do something called a Dalton Speaker Series because we also think parent ed is a really important part of our whole schooling process too. And so tonight Russell's our guest. So he's going to dig in a little bit more into. Well, you know, things that they've learned from their experience in Think Global, but also start to give, I would say, some signaling and ideas and visuals to like what's going to happen with Dalton's version of the Changemaker curriculum.
Yeah.
And also take questions and things from the community. Excited about that.
Think we'll,
and that's tonight at 6.
We'll put a link. Maybe it's a bit late notice. But you're also on the 16th on in the Marriott.
No, okay. Not this time. But we will be recording tonight's session.
Yeah, we can share that.
Perfect.
Because we always have such limited time, and I know that a lot of people. This is a strange time. We don't normally do a live stream at midday. So thank you for those that tuned in live. And if you are watching this on replay, and if you type your comments, we'll be able to grab Russell or Sean to answer them as well. Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to come here. This will probably be my last time on this site. I hope I'll get a visit. Early up to the new site, and it really is a joyful place. And so, yeah, it's been a really interesting afternoon. Thank you for watching. I think we will be live next week at Thursday at 6 o'clock. And so, join me then. And thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you,
Ruth. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn more about the Hong Kong education system and parenting and education news and trends, check out our back catalogue. All available to download for free. You can also head over to our YouTube, Facebook or website for lots of free useful information for parents and educators. Links in the show notes. Until next time.